still did. He woke.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We can get into some playoff talk at the end of the show as the NHL playoffs, both series tied two games apiece. Edmonton fell behind last night, but came roaring back to tie their series with Dallas. Game five's coming up in series tied 2-2. Now tonight, T-Wolves back at home, still trailing 3-1. What percent chance do you give them of forcing a game seven? What percent chance do you give them of winning the series? Keep in mind, it's never happened. This is the 156th try in the NBA playoffs with the team down 3-0. But did they crack the code for Anthony Edwards in having him have enough energy to finish games by moving him off of Kyrie Irving and letting Jaden McDaniels have that task? We'll see. It certainly worked in game four. Some college stuff throughout the rest of the show. SEC meetings down in Florida. Greg Sankey kind of addressed everything that's going on, trying to be diplomatic, but also going to tell you that he's not going to get ran over. Stories starting to come out of kind of when and how the OU Texas to SEC thing got started, how that all sort of started to come about. Now that it's a rivalry, this is a big talk because of something that Chris Del Conte said on Paul Feinbaum's show yesterday. Chris Del Conte, the AD at Texas.
Boy, he sounded like he was having a lot of fun on the beach.
Sounded drunk.
He sounded like he had a few.
He sounded a little drunk.
Hit up Margaritaville.
Yeah, he did. He sounded a little. Hey, he was
on the beach and having fun.
He was flying the OU Texas flag. There's no doubt about that.
Sure he was.
With the Red River Shootout. So where, now that it's an SEC rivalry, will it start getting its due a little bit more? For what we all know that it is. 8 or 9 conference games, which would you rather see? With all the changes coming. I mean, obviously, the complete landscape, not only, I mean, the off-the-field stuff is obviously there, but on the field, so much has changed with all these conference realignments. So what are some games that you're excited to see maybe become rivalries with new conference mates across the country? Then also Women's College World Series supposed to start today. We'll see how much that does. As it looks like nighttime outside the studio all of a sudden with the just looking out there, the clouds that are rolling in. Did the top two seeds, Oklahoma and Texas, do they have the toughest first round games of anybody in the tournament? Who's the most important player? And then name me a champion that's not Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, or Texas, if that can occur. Who do you think has the best choice there? And then, we're going to have to pick our Women's College World Series champ here today as it gets started right after the show is over. 225-9698 is the phone to the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We'll talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News, Big Elk and Paragon TV, and then, of course, Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and find it anywhere podcasts drop. Breaking news, Jared.
What we got?
Breaking news from the U.S. Women's Open on the golf course. Nelly Korda, who has just absolutely dominated women's golf, has made a 10 on the par 3 12th, her third hole of the day. A 10.
Well,
here is how it happened. Shot one, 178 yards to bunker.
Okay.
Shot two, So, okay, if you're, so there's water in front of the screen on this par three. She hit it in the back bunker.
Okay, I wonder if water was involved in this.
From the back bunker, she hit it in the water.
There you go.
Then she dropped and hit it in the water again. Then she dropped and hit it in the water again. Then she dropped, hit it on the green, and two-putted for a 10. Plus 8 through 3, one would assume that would take her out of contention.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
But we'll see. You never know. She's been so good. But what it, that's it's pretty shocking. It'd be like if Scottie Scheffler made a 10 here in a couple weeks at the U.S. Open on, like, the third hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'd be the exact same thing that Nelly did this morning. So,
ouch.
Tough break there for Nelly Korda. All right, Women's College World Series starting today. See what happens with the weather in Oklahoma City. Game one at 11 o'clock between the UCLA and Stanford, then OU and Duke after that at 1:30. The night session starts with Texas and Stanford, and then the night cap, that's at 6 o'clock, and then the night cap is supposed to be at 8:30 between Oklahoma State and Florida.
It might be 1 a.m.
Is there some kind of rule that it can't start, like, after midnight?
There's been some in the past. Well, no, that I don't know. There's been some in the past that have gone to.
That have,
like,
gone, yeah.
But not necessarily started after midnight. That have gone way past.
Yeah, there's been some late games.
Yeah.
It's kind
I
of
don't
the,
know. I mean, looking at it here, watching the radar, there's some. Just rain. It's all it is. Not thunderstorm, just rain. It's creeping in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and it's supposed to get more stormy as the day moves along.
Yeah.
I think tonight is when you're going to start seeing more of the storm chances go up. But it seemed like I remember something about if you can't start a game at that late, which would make sense. So we'll see how it goes. But anyway, that's supposed to be the schedule. A couple of really tough games, I think, for the top two seeds, Oklahoma and Texas, with Texas having to face Stanford, Oklahoma having to play Duke. Do you think those are the two hard? Did the 1 and 2 seeds have a harder time than what is the next two, which would be the 4 in Florida and the 6 in UCLA?
Well, it certainly looks that way. Starting with number 1 Texas with Stanford with Kennedy, we would assume would be the pitcher that Stanford throws. That she's a tough out, a candidate to be the player of the year. So that's not going to be easy for Texas. And with the way Texas struggled against A&M, it looks like they're definitely beatable. And then, of course, OU, I mentioned Duke. You heard a little promo right before the show about how Duke, a lot of people, and we talked about this, a lot of people thought that they probably should have been hosting the Super Regional. They've been good this year, really good this year, and they proved it at Missouri. And so that 10 seed next to him is kind of it's not really reflective of what they really are. So, yeah, I can get on board with that, because I think Oklahoma State knows what they're going to get with Florida. We know we're going to get a good game there, 5 versus 4. Does anyone really give Alabama a big shot against UCLA? Not really, but who knows? But those two right there, OU and Texas, and then there's always a situation of them, you know, they got their own storylines, but maybe looking ahead. But with everything I just said, I could definitely get on board with those two games. Those two teams could be the two best games today.
So Kennedy, to support that theory, Kennedy leads the nation in OPS allowed and strikeout rate. So basically what that tells you is you don't touch it very often, and when you do, he ain't doing nothing with it.
And in that Texas series last weekend, their bats took forever to get going. It didn't in that extra inning game that they had to come back to win. And then it took them a little bit to get alive in game 3 against A&M. Then we know what happened in game 1. So they can't afford to wait for their bats to come, because she's, you just said it, probably the best pitcher in the country right now.
Here's the thing about Stanford that would lead you to disagree with that statement. Stanford has lost 15 times. In 9 of those, they've scored none or 1.
Yeah, so their offense is really complimenting her.
That's the whole thing. Yeah. That's why they're probably the 8th seed and have lost 15 times, because they don't have the total package.
Mm-hmm.
On the Duke side, Duke's pitching for the season, lowest on-base percentage allowed. there's two teams in this tournament that are both top five in runs scored and top five in runs allowed for the season. Not surprisingly, those two teams are Oklahoma and Texas. Duke, though, almost there. They were seventh in runs scored, fourth in runs allowed. And they have an interesting combo of pitching with Ward, the righty, 1.28 ERA. She's right-handed, and it's low and hard. Most pitch, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That she likes to work down. Then the lefty, Cassidy Curd, 1.29 ERA, so both right there at the same. She's a lefty. She throws it high and hard. Harder, really. And so they kind of – that complement is pretty interesting with their styles from either side. And so, yeah, I don't know. I honestly, of the higher ranks – of the higher seeds that are playing today, Florida has the hardest game against Oklahoma State. But – The 1-2, OU and Texas, they have their work cut out for them in this first game. And it's not impossible. We saw, what, 2 or 3 years ago? Was it 3 years ago now? Where the Sooners lost to Odyssey Alexander and then came all the way back mm-hmm. to win the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not impossible. But it's certainly a much harder road, even just losing today versus losing in the second round. So, yeah, I think it's pretty tough. And by the way, Canada, she had her worst outing of the season in the Super Regional start against in Game 1 against LSU. All she did after that was turn around and throw 13 shutout innings against the Tigers from there to win those last two games. And, by the way, everybody saw that pays attention to OU softball saw what she did against that vaunted Sooner offense a year ago in the College World Series in 10 innings, only gave up like 3 earned runs. So it's serious. She's a serious, serious problem for anybody that faces her. Is she the most important player in the tournament?
No.
Or if not, who is?
Well, I'll stay with Stanford, and I'd say her name is Reagan Krause. Am I saying it right? Reagan Krause. She's their number two. So if Canada can get the win and Stanford can get the win, can Krause – see, it's everyone's thinking Stanford and Canada. But if she's not pitching, can Krause continue to be good? She's a 20-win pitcher from what I've seen. And, of course, Stanford's bats are going to have to help. But that I'd say her. If Canada's not in the circle, who else for Stanford is going to be in the circle and continue to keep them there and give them a chance to win to advance in this thing? She's very important in their chase here. It can't be just one pitcher.
Yeah, and problem for me with Stanford is the lack of hitting. I don't know how – I guess my point is if Canada isn't carrying them on her back, they ain't winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's why I beg her.
Don't think she even – Yeah. To me, if it's not Canada, then they're not going to be there because they can't hit nearly like the rest of these teams. I would say it's Lexi Kilfoyle for Oklahoma State. She's they're 5-2 against the higher seeds in this tournament when she's in the circle. She shut out Texas twice in that series in the Big 12, 26-3. And I think it's she's kind of like that engine. Not to the total extent of this, but we all saw for the last couple of years how much different a level of excitement and how much different a level of energy and emotion there was on the field when Jordy Ball was in the circle for OU. I think she's a lot that same catalyst of everything for OSU. She's been fantastic since she transferred from Alabama a couple years ago. And it feels like if it's not going to be her, is that confidence that OSU seems to have after running through the beating OU, beating Texas, in those series, does that start to wane if she's not able to be her dominant self that she has been over since like March? She's just been unbelievable. 12-1, I think, is her record in that time. So I would say it's her because it does feel like, and listen, there is zero doubt. Now, to what level Oklahoma is more vulnerable? Yeah, I don't know. But there's zero doubt they're more vulnerable this year than they certainly were last year, if not the last couple. I mean, 54-6 is still unbelievable, but it ain't 61-1. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They are more vulnerable. Question is, how much more? Enough to where somebody can clip them? And if that is, I mean, gosh, doesn't it feel like anybody and everybody that's picking a winner in this is picking either OU, OSU, or Texas? Have you heard anybody pick somebody else?
I have not, but I've heard different matchups in the championship series. But it's always involved one of those three.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You know what I mean? I'm with you.
What is the text to me? So what to you? What is the biggest question mark or the biggest or the most important thing for Oklahoma in this series or in this College World Series?
Kelly Maxwell, if she can get ahead early and stay in control. So we've seen her struggle early. We saw it in that Super Regional, but then calm down and become really good. She has to be good really early in games. So it's how she comes out and how she starts for me. Because I think the bats are, I wouldn't say dominant like they have been in the past World Series or past championship runs, but they are coming alive. So I'm not really questioning their bats anymore. But I will. I am questioning Kelly Maxwell. Yeah, so she's very important.
I think that's probably true, although I mean, the hitting was a problem. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you look in that Texas series, the hitting was a major problem. To hold for the pitching to hold that vaunted Texas offense down as much as they did,
and the hitting could not.
You know, you win 5-3. Yeah. You win 5-2 on in the first game. You lose 2-1 back to back games. You know that's now. It does feel like, and even Alyssa Brito said it the other day, we're a completely different team since that last Sunday of Bedlam. That turned this team around and has us on the track that we've been on the last couple of years. So, I suppose we'll see exactly to what extent that is. If it is somebody besides the three Big 12 schools to win this thing, who do you give the best chance?
Well, I've been giving a lot of love to Stanford, and I know the offense has been anemic at best, but just their route. In fact, I went March Madness style and filled out a bracket. Let me bring it up so I remind myself. I like their matchups on that side of the bracket. So I think if I'm going to pick anyone outside of a Big 12 team, I'll go with Stanford.
Yeah, see, I didn't because of who they had to play. They'll have to play Texas and then either OSU or Florida, which both offensive teams that one swing of the bat can end Stanford's hopes.
Not to dispute you, but do you like them against Texas because of Canada?
No. Because the problem for them is, and it was the problem for them last year too, as good as she was against OU, it just took one and the game was over because they can't hit.
Because they couldn't get the bats.
They couldn't get the bats. You know, and against Texas, Florida, and OSU, that ain't it. You're as awesome as she is, I think you're going to have to score two or three runs, and I don't know if they can. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I just don't know if they can, whereas those other offenses are as good as there is. I would say it's UCLA. They're playing great, the best they played all year. And, I mean, they get by far, at least the seeding-wise, by far the most favorable matchup in Alabama. And so then you take your chances against either OU or Duke, and if you win that one, now you're just kind of hanging out waiting. You know, and you put yourself – I think they have the easiest road – to be able to be a game away from the championship series, if that makes sense. And then somebody's going to have to beat you twice. And if that happens, that happens. But I can see UCLA beating Oklahoma quicker than I can see Stanford beating Texas and either Oklahoma State or Florida, or even Duke for that matter. Mm-hmm. Duke would then have to beat Oklahoma and probably UCLA. Just feels like that Bama game is really giving UCLA a major opportunity that no one else in the field has because of the other three matchups. I mean, to me, that's by far the weakest game as far as both teams. Now, we sit here and say that, and Bama just went to Tennessee and knocked them off, and a lot of people liked Tennessee to be a possible national title winner, and Bama went down there and beat them on their home field. So we might be sliding them a little bit.
We've seen a lot in this tournament the very first game produce an upset. Like the very first game of the tournament on a Thursday produce an upset. That could be kind of a trap game. And no one's, you know, no one for Alabama is thinking that they're an underdog. They just did what you just said. So and they've been in this tournament before. So they're one of those perennial contenders in this thing. And they probably felt slighted that they got such a low seed and they had to go to Tennessee and everything. And then they go and win the whole dang thing, the super regional that is. So they're not going to shy away from this. They're thinking, hey, we're just as worthy to be here as UCLA is.
And see, and that's where I really like UCLA in this spot, because it's UCLA. It is the biggest power in the sport historically. And there ain't a soul talking about them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's talking UCLA. It's either Canada, it's obviously the three Big 12 schools, it's the offense of Florida. There ain't no UCLA talk. You know, Duke, you haven't heard UCLA, that game is almost like it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I like that for them. One last thing before we pick a winner. There is one team in this tournament that has performed way above everybody else when it comes to their record against the teams in the tournament. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So they've all played at least one game against somebody in this tournament. But there's one team that has performed way better than everybody else when they've played these teams. You know who that is?
Would it be OSU?
It's OSU. 6-2 in games against the field in this Women's College World Series. Texas is 6-5. They have a winning record. Florida's 3-2. They have a winning record. Sooners are even 4-4. UCLA 3-4. And then Stanford 1-4, Duke 0-1, obviously the loss to OU, and then Bama is only 1-2. So when Oklahoma State has played these games, they have performed exceptionally well against the teams in the field. So I was going to leave that out of the conversation because I didn't want to tip you off to anything. So having said all that, who wins? Who plays and who wins?
Well, I've tipped my hand to Stanford, so I put Stanford in that championship series versus OU, and OU in three games.
Question is throwing underhanded on your arm. It's hard on your arm. Absolutely not. And that's, you know, if this was like the College World Series, I think it would be interesting to think about pitching and whether or not would you want to start somebody here off the bat that you're basically going to waste for two innings and then have a five-hour rain delay and maybe not be able to come. You know, I think there would be a lot of strategy.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
I think
there
would be a lot more strategy as far as the baseball part of this and throwing overhanded with what's expected weather-wise.
And also think of it, if the winner has a day of rest, weather pending, you know, if the weather doesn't mess up the schedule. So it does make you think, say Canada does throw on Thursday, she has a full day of rest on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Could she come back on Saturday and
absolutely
throw,
you know?
And
she
if
will.
They win that one, they wait all the way till Monday.
No, Stanford continuing to win is going to help them immensely.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about that.
But there is no pitch count rule. There's no none of that.
I mean, I think you'd have to see her either just get lit or
get tired.
Or even, I don't even know if that's going to, I don't know if she's coming out for that. Maybe they get ahead, because you can always bring them back.
Sure, you can re-enter.
That's the whole thing. Yeah. You know, if you get ahead, say 5-0 in the fourth inning, you can throw somebody else until it became a situation that, we better get her back in there. Mm-hmm. And that could help, you know, if Stanford gets in the loser side of this thing with her.
I'm not knocking our texter, but you can't think of this like baseball. You know,
no.
I think that's the mentality right there of resting on.
I mean, listen, until the last decade or so, maybe even not that long ago, pitchers threw this whole tournament.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it was no big deal for somebody to fire 140 and then come back like the next game and throw like 120. It's as the sport has become more popular, it feels like that's where the pitcher, you know, the staffs have come in. I mean, forever, there was just one.
One, yeah.
You had a pitcher, and that is it.
But you're right. The popularity of the sport has inspired a lot of young girls going, I want to be a pitcher. I mean, I know on our team personally, we got three good ones. We're about to have four, and we're kind of jumping for joy thinking, we got so many options we can have, and we're just talking about a 10U team here.
Yeah, that's totally different than it was a decade ago or so when there was just one. So, I mean, it can be done. It's you know, it's probably not quite the preferred method now, but when you have someone like her, she's going to be out there for most of it.
As long, yeah.
For most of it, if not every bit
of
it.
This is the World Series. They're not going to hold her, just, hey, you went on Thursday, you can rest for Saturday. No. It's all in.
Okay.
Who do you got?
This is probably more of a heart pick because I want to see it so bad. I'll take Bedlam. I'll take a Bedlam series.
I wanted to go there. I really did.
I will take a Bedlam series.
And for the record, I have OSU a game away from that.
I've got Bedlam, and then I'm not picking against the Sooners as much as
well, it's
all
kinda
this
like,
stuff.
It's kind of like you can't until you see it.
There's lots of numbers that tell you this is OSU's year, at least that for me, that make me believe this could be Oklahoma State's year. You know, beating up on Texas and Oklahoma in the regular season, that 6-2 mark against teams that are there, which much of that does come from those OU and Texas series. But I ain't going to believe it till I see it. I'm just not going to. And I really don't think OU is going to win, but I can't pick against them. Does that make sense? I mean, I know that's riding the fence too. That's not right.
I know.
But I really don't think they're going
to
win.
It's hard to go against the fact that they've won three in a row.
It is.
There's one side of it like, well, certainly they can't make history. No one's ever done four in a row. You got to pick somebody else. And then there's other side of it. They just won three in a row. This is where this is their second home, right? They live here. So it's hard to go against it.
I can't wait.
That's kind of why I went with OU. Just for all of that, they don't look as dominant, but when they get on this stage, they love it. Gaston knows how to get them up.
If it is Bedlam, how much of an advantage would it be for Oklahoma State to be so familiar with Maxwell? And does that affect Patty's decision making as far as pitching?
Throw May first game, or
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good one. Maybe.
OSU's bats are hot. OSU. Think about OSU is this. They're one of those teams. They're almost like a baseball team right now. They rely so much on the home run to generate their offense. So if you can keep them in the park, they don't score. You know, they're not as fine tuned at manufacturing runs as some of these other teams. But man, they can hit the ball at the ballpark. So I reluctantly pick OU in three games over OSU. Although it does feel to me like this is their time. It just does. But I ain't doing it. I ain't picking against him. It's like trying to pick against Tom. Like, you don't pick against Tom Brady or now Mahomes in the Super Bowl until somebody beats him.
By the way, to add on about our talk about moving the World Series and how such an advantage is for OU, you know OU's four of their six losses came at Love Field in Norman?
At home. SEC. SEC.
It just means more.
SEC. Breaking news. Welcome back. Skinny on Sports right here on a Thursday, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Breaking news. We have some game times for Oklahoma to start the season and also another game in the middle of the season. We have game times, according to George Stoya, which he's a Sooner Scoop guy.
Pretty reliable.
His sources are telling him the first three games of the season. We already knew Temple was a 6 o'clock Friday game for Oklahoma. Game two against Houston, 6:45. Game three against Tulane, 2:30. And then Brett McMurphy is reporting that the first Red River Shootout as SEC members will kick off at 2:30 on October the 12th, either on ABC or ESPN. So that traditional 11 o'clock start time for the Red River Shootout is, at least for the first year, no more, as that will be a 2:30 kick. The last time it was a 2:30 kick was 2017. The Baker to Mark Andrews, and how many times did Sam Ehlinger get a concussion in that game?
Yeah.
Or maybe in that final drive. But yeah, so that means of the 12 regular season games, the four times we know of, this is a major change for Oklahoma football already. 0 11 o'clock games so far for the Sooners on the schedule.
Awesome.
Are you surprised OU Texas has changed?
The time?
The time.
No, I wonder if there's a lot of push for this from both the ADs here. And I know we're about to dive in about the story of how the SEC and OU and Texas all came to be, but I wonder if they were like, you know, we're tired of this game being at 11. We're tired of it. We're hearing it from our fans. We're tired of these 11 o'clock kickoffs. Not just this game. I don't know how many Texas has gotten 11 a.m. games. I know OU fans were up in arms about it. So I wonder if SEC said, okay, yeah, we'll throw you a bone here.
See, what's kind of weird, I mean, yeah, there's been a bunch of griping from Oklahoma fans for years and years now with the Big 12 and the windows and their most important national windows being that 11 o'clock game on Fox with the big noon kickoff and, you know, and all that, where Oklahoma was front and center in that one a lot of times. It does feel like people don't mind that game being at 11. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, people don't mind. Well, for one, you can go home. You don't necessarily have to spend two nights in Dallas.
Yeah, and that's true.
You get there Friday, do your party, and wake up early. Have you a corny dog and a wax paper cup of beer before going into the Cotton Bowl, and then being home at 6 or 7 o'clock at night. I'm anxious to see how those windows are. You know, for years and years. Obviously, CBS, the 2:30 SEC game, was the marquee game most weeks of the week in the SEC. Now, there was an occasional 7 o'clock CBS game, maybe two of those a year, which that's gone away. It's all ABC or ESPN, and this specifically says, from Brett McMurphy anyway, that the 2:30 kickoff with OU Texas will either be on ABC or ESPN. So that would tell me that probably that 2:30 time slot on ABC becomes the 2:30 time slot that we are used to on CBS. And then they'll use the ESPN, ESPN2, all that for kind of the ancillary games. And then, you know, that 6 o'clock kick on ESPN probably be the second best game of the week. 6:30 on ESPN2, you know, there's all those different times. But that would tell me that they're going, instead of basically surrender the 11 o'clock window to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Essentially. Or maybe the Big 12.
Our college days. It just felt like after game day, you tuned into Minnesota versus
Iowa
or something.
It was
every time.
Until Fox got involved.
Right.
You're exactly right. It was, ugh.
I was a Big Ten snoozer.
Yes. Not anymore. Since Fox has gotten involved and had the pregame show to try to rival game day, that 11 o'clock big noon window has been the most watched in college football. And a big part of that is the games that they've attracted. Now they lose some of the luster a little bit with some teams, but gain some Pac-12 teams that now. I mean, it'd just be, wouldn't it be crazy weird to have, let's say, Ohio State's at Oregon. Is that going to be an 11 o'clock game, which is a 9 a.m. game?
Just can't be.
Surely not.
No.
And then that
was the joke, though, when those West Coast schools went to the Big Ten was, are they really going to have 9 a.m. games?
So surely that means that from there, you know, NBC is going to be involved a little bit. CBS is going to be back with the Big Ten. Maybe that's where a couple of weeks a year you see that big time game on one of those other one of those other networks opposing what the SEC is going to do on ABC or ESPN. Man, I thought Greg Sankey had some really interesting comments. Not a ton to say. I just think there's so many questions with the settlement coming down, with the player, the past players, the $2.7 billion is going to be owed back, and then somewhere it sounds like between $20 and $22 million a school. There's just so many more questions than even answers about that right now. So he really focused more on the conference level of what the discussions were, yet also making it known that he still carries the biggest stick in college athletics. You know, he kind of rode that line pretty well, I thought, as far as, yeah, we're worried about us, but don't kid yourself. We're also watching, and, you know, there's upheaval in the ACC that's possible at almost any single moment with you know, the grant of rights and all that kind of stuff. If conference realignment were to have to pop again, he's making it known that, yeah, we're watching, and we'll get whoever we want from those holdovers or whatever that might be. But it does feel like, at least for the next little bit here, that everything's going to be more focused on what the conference is starting July 1 with Oklahoma and Texas joining.
Yeah, so can you break down, I know you kind of did, but like what stood out to what he said?
Just that. There's not, you know, for the last how many years? Gosh, 10 or 12? Ever since A&M and Nebraska and Colorado and Missouri left the Big 12, it seemed like, you know, and I've even said it on the show numerous times over the years, that the intrigue of conference realignment is almost more fun to talk about than the games because of where people might have gone, you know, what that was going to look like. We haven't talked about it once this time. I mean, since college football has been over, we've talked about how there's new teams going places, but as far as, oh, this team might go there, that team might be, that's over for now, I think, because of the grant of rights through 2036 for the ACC and how penal it will be to try to get out of that deal. Schools just don't have the money for now.
Yeah.
Now, here come 4 or 5 years down the road, maybe that becomes a possibility for Clemson or Florida State or whoever, but at least right now, with the financial burden that would put to try to get out of that contract, it seems like there's not really any sense in talking about it. So, for the first time in a while, I think he's more comfortable with just dealing with SEC issues and SEC moving forward and how they continue to kind of lead the way along with the Big Ten versus try to crush other conferences or, you know what I'm saying, like gain more members.
Right, yeah.
And a big question about that would be moving forward, 8 games or 9 games in the conference schedule.
Well, I see the benefits of both, but me personally, I would like 8 games to leave room for the opportunity to schedule bigger non-conference games. If you have 9 games, especially SEC, every game is important, and I would be afraid that schools would shy away from scheduling the – like, for instance, OU scheduling like Michigan or Ohio State or USC or somebody going, you know, we got Tennessee, we got Alabama, we got Auburn, we got Georgia. Let's just schedule Maine and – North Dakota State this year. That's a selfish answer, but that's why I would prefer 8.
I think it's all going to come down to, and the reason why there's not been any definitive decision on this is I think everyone has to be in such a wait-and-see mode with what the committee does with 12 teams being in the playoff.
Yeah, see what the
– Is Texas
– What would benefit better,
if
right?
If let's say they lose – 2 games in the conference and a third to Michigan, but do they get rewarded because of playing that Michigan game, or is it just all the 10-2s go ahead of them at 9-3 and it doesn't matter? That, to me, that could be the deciding factor of the whole thing, is because you know good and well TV is going to demand, with the money they're shelling out, they're going to demand as good a matchups as you can possibly get. And with the history of scheduling within the SEC, giving them a fourth non-conference game has not guaranteed a matchup that anybody wanted to watch on TV. You're not guaranteed that with another conference game, but it's going to be a whole hell of a lot better than what it could have been. And then, like you said, if you're rewarded, I mean, I think you're, in Oklahoma for the longest time has had kind of a terrible team, a pretty good team, and then a pretty marquee opponent, at least when the game was made. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, now, sometimes it worked out. Sometimes it didn't work out. And however you look at that from your point of view, but the truth was, these games are scheduled so far out that you don't necessarily know how good a team is going to be when that game is played. You know, you look up and you go, man, how cool is that going to be? Oklahoma and, I don't know, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And then Tennessee wasn't as good as what you hoped for. But then again, you know, you schedule OU Notre Dame when Notre Dame's struggling, all of a sudden you get to it in 12 and 13, and Notre Dame plays in the national title game in 2012. You know, and so that worked out in a certain way to give you that marquee non-conference game. And that happens throughout college football. I would prefer 9 because you can still – here's the deal. Either way, you're still going to see every school in the conference come to Norman every 4 years.
Yeah.
But if you have 9, then you have those. Then you have the 3 permanent opponents, which to me could help create rivalries. You know, for if it was me doing the schedule for Oklahoma, obviously Texas has to be one of those permanent opponents. I personally would choose Arkansas because I think that could be an awesome rivalry with Oklahoma and Arkansas. They haven't played much in their history, even though they're right there, mm-hmm. side by side. And then it'd have to be like Florida or somebody like that would be the other one. You know, and everybody had the different 3. But then after that, so that takes up 4 out of the 16, including yourself. So then the other 6 games can just rotate. You know, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed. Instead of playing like these first 2 years, you know, you've got this schedule this year, and you've got the exact mirror next year. Same team, just different locations. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to saying, you know, maybe having this schedule first, the other 6 next, then mirror.
Right.
That, you know what I mean? Just to get a little bit more flavor all the way throughout it. Probably won't happen that way. Even if it went to 9, you'd probably see, you know, those same 3. Then you get this 6 here, the same 6 the other place. Then go to the, you know, but I wonder how much that would, it's all going to be schedule dependent on year by year for a lot of these teams. You know, the ups and downs of Missouri or Ole Miss or even Oklahoma, Tennessee, Florida. You know, you feel like, does Bama join that kind of up and down, or do they stay, you know, with DeBoer where it feels like Georgia is and nobody else is?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Texas is right there in that too. But I would prefer 9 if you get rewarded by playing those big games out of conference.
Yes.
Because that just gives you more good games.
Yes.
What are you excited to see? Maybe step away from the SEC because we've talked about games that are coming up, not only this year, but you know, moving forward for both Oklahoma and Texas as well. Around the country, though, some of the new rivalries that might be able to get made. What are some of those that you might be looking forward to?
Outside of the SEC, any kind of SEC. I kind of stretched with this one. I'm trying to find like storylines of teams that just naturally you would think if they played each other annually or biannually or whenever, they would just irk each other. So I start with like USC and Ohio State.
Yeah.
I just think you got your West Coast LA attitude. You got Lincoln Riley and all of his stuff, his shenanigans. And then Ohio State, that Midwest toughness, and we're the Ohio State, and they're over there doing the victory thing. I could see those two just really not liking each other. I went Oklahoma State and Utah.
Me
just
too.
Because I think they're going to be really good, and like not just next year, but in the years to come. And I think they will battle each other constantly for the Big 12 title year in and year out. And Utah is a tough place to play, and Boone Pickens is no picnic either. So I can see that one being kind of like how OSU and Texas Tech kind of turned into that nasty rivalry. I can see that turning in for OSU and Utah. Texas Tech and Arizona kind of just, hey, we're the best team in the West in the Big 12. Now we're the best team. I can see them not liking each other. And I kind of went wild here, but I was trying to find – this is all a contingent Primetime is still at Colorado, because I think he has a big part of this of creating rivalries and his, you know, very out there attitude. Colorado versus, and I'll say it like this, Colorado versus any Texas school, because I think anytime they play a Texas school at a Texas school, he's going in there to say, hey, look, we're really good. Come up here to Colorado. You know, it's a recruiting ploy. It's a recruiting thing. I think it's a real reason why he wanted back in the Big 12 and why Colorado wanted in the Big 12, because Deion said, I want to get into Texas. So I could see a bunch of Texas schools taking and having a problem with that and going, you just can't come in here and saying that you're better than us. So this year I checked their schedule. They go to Baylor. I think that's about it.
Yeah, OSU goes out there. Oh, yeah, you mean in Texas.
Texas schools. They go to Baylor. They go to who do they play in? They go to Lubbock. But really, if they're playing like, you know, TCU's. TCU, I almost narrowed it down to TCU. We've seen them play a couple times already. TCU was kind of the reason why Colorado suddenly was thrust into the limelight last year, and they were the story of college football, at least for the first 4 to 5 weeks. And I bet TCU would like to get a little revenge on them because of that. And I think I could see, again, Deion going in, wanting to get into the Metroplex, going, hey, I want to come in here, and I want to beat these guys every time and recruit some of their kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, I kind of put it like USC and Oregon – with Michigan and Penn State and Ohio, you know, all of that round robin type of thing. But that leads me back to the problem with trying to create these rivalries.
They don't play every year.
They don't play every year. And so that's why in the 9-team schedule, I just saw a tweet actually that Ross Dellinger, which he's been a big time SEC guy, he said an interesting wrinkle at the SEC meetings is searching for untapped revenue sources, i.e. trying to pay that extra $20 million that's coming out of your budget to for the players. Schools that were originally opposed to may have renewed interest in playing a 9th league game. Why would that be an untapped revenue source? Because that might be a way to squeeze more money out of the TV with a better schedule. And then that would also, and that's another thing that leads me to believe that those non-conference games, those big time non-conference games, aren't going away. This TV's going to make you play them.
Right. I love that we're getting the renewal of rivalries.
It is a Thursday, Jared. What does that mean?
It's we're going to go get some wings at Boomtown.
11 o'clock.
Hey, I think I know what we could do.
11 o'clock is softball starting, Women's College World Series. You know, if you want a late lunch, if you want to watch the Sooners, if the weather will cooperate, that would be a great time. It's 50-cent boneless chicken wing day down at the Boomtown Grill. They sell tons of them every single Thursday. You can enjoy your chicken wings for 50 cents in front of 12 big-screen TVs. Happy hour starts at 2, runs through 6 Monday through Friday. Appetizer plates, drink specials, and more. 11 cold ones on tap, 30 bottles or cans, imports, domestics. There's a large wine selection. That smoked old-fashioned is there. Classic cocktail with a modern twist. Boomtown Grill, 2103 South Main, right here in Elk City. Open every day of the week, 11 to 10, Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11. On Friday and Saturday, there'd be a perfect spot to head on down and check out, softball. It'll lead into NBA playoffs and all of it. Also, our friends at Rotha Brothers, thank you to them. Highway 183 north of Clinton, Rotha Brothers, family-owned dealership that started with three owners back in Kingfisher in 1976. It's now expanded to 3 locations in western Oklahoma, covering it all in Clinton, Fairview, and Kingfisher. Rother Brothers offers variety of agricultural and outdoor power equipment. In all of Oklahoma, there isn't a more friendly and knowledgeable staff than theirs at Rother Brothers. Call or stop by 580-323-1981, as I mentioned, just north of Clinton on Highway 183. Okay, Jared, we were talking about rivalries. We might see new ones from the new conferences coming up in the fall. And you mentioned renewal of rivalries. Get it out of the way. The one that everybody is probably most excited about and the most long-term nasty one that gets renewed is obviously Texas versus Texas A&M. I think it's been awesome in this interim time. We haven't seen them play football. But, man, like the basketball committee has had them slated to play a couple of times. Obviously, we just saw it in softball. We're going to see it in baseball with Texas going to Texas A&M. I think the different committees have kept that going just enough in different years through baseball and softball and basketball. And now we finally get to see it in football.
Yeah, that's one I wrote down. One that I want to get familiar with. I haven't because it's always been on the West Coast, but now it will be a conference game, BYU and Utah.
Yeah, the Civil War.
Holy War.
Holy War.
Yeah.
Civil War is the Oregon one that went away.
Yeah, the BYU-Utah one. I've always heard stories that one is pretty nasty between the fans there in Utah. And I don't know, did we consider OU-Missouri a rivalry?
No.
But it was a long standing series for the longest time. We had some fun games, Big 12 championship games and stuff like that. But I'm kind of excited to get that one back.
You know how I know Missouri hasn't really fit into the SEC?
How's that?
As soon as Oklahoma started to join, they're trying to get a rivalry kicked off. Like they don't really have one.
You think it would have been like Arkansas? Or,
well, they tried. The conference has tried to make Arkansas a thing. That's how I know that it's happening. Is because as soon as they had a chance to get back at, and it could have been Nebraska, instead it was Oklahoma trying to force this rivalry down everybody's throats. Hammer and a nail is not a rivalry. We'll see what happens. But yeah, that's one that.
It feels like Missouri is the replacement for Oklahoma State for OU. Where OU is like, okay, Texas is our rival. You're just kind of annoying us right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I would go with like Tech. Because Oklahoma State was on the radar. Missouri isn't even on the radar for OU fans. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Now, win a couple. That's maybe you're right if it was like 2010. But in the last 15 years, Oklahoma State's won enough times to where it's like, okay, it's more than annoying, little brother. You're actually kind of punching us a little bit here.
Yeah.
Mid-poo, as it started to become on the on the social medias. They haven't done enough to even get to the annoying stage just yet as far as actual performance. Now they're going to have a chance because obviously they've got a good team coming back. That could be one. I mean, like I mentioned, Arkansas as a rivalry that I would like to see get going.
Yeah.
I personally hope that the Missouri thing doesn't get forced.
Well, yeah, you hope it kind of just organically just.
That's right. And you got to play.
There's a lot of talk. There's been a lot of talk, of course, on social media. And then, of course, players, Caden Green, namely one of them, going to Mizzou.
Yeah, and what's his name? What was the.
Theo Weiss did
now the recruit the number one guy Williams Winery kind of baited OU fans into believing and then stayed home at Mizzou. You know, if PJ has a great season and then goes to Mizzou, that would fire people up because he's from up there. PJ Adebowale.
But it all doesn't matter. What if all that happens and then what if?
Well, if OU just kills them on the field,
goes up there to Columbia and beats them.
Yeah, to spark that rivalry for real,
Mizzou would have to
Mizzou
win.
Needs to win this year to really get it going. And it's a
but
possibility.
Don't kid yourself. Like, right now it's a rivalry because there's a lot of OU fans who would love nothing more to go up
there. Yeah, but not really. It's just the annoyance of social media right now.
Yeah.
And that only gets more annoying if it's a year of hearing about how Missouri beat Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Then that's what it always takes. A lot of people want to start a rivalry with OU – in football, you got to win. You have to win the games, and that's just the way it's always been. Now this it's a totally new era here, and the chances of teams winning games are a lot higher than they have been because of the quality of opponents that we're going to see.
I think potentially a rivalry that can bud up for OU, one that I didn't really think would be until I started thinking about this question, is Tennessee.
I knew you were going to say Tennessee because of the Heupel angle.
Well, the Heupel thing, they wear orange. The last time they went to Knoxville was a really good game. This year could be a really good game, first game of the SEC, all that, but I could see that one kind of turning into something. If Tennessee maintains their end of the bargain and gets just as good as OU and maybe meeting an SEC championship game every once in a while.
And that's the whole thing, and we don't know. There's probably a whole bunch of people around the South saying the same thing about OU. Can they come in here and win some games and be worthy of our arrival?
Yeah.
Some that have leg to stand on saying that and some that don't. But that's what's so cool about it. And then, you know, I could see Colorado and Oklahoma State being a thing.
I almost wrote that
for
one down.
For sure could see that being a thing. Mm-hmm. With the personalities of the coaches, especially if they could get riled up at each other one time. You know, I could totally see in that to see that being a great thing for Oklahoma State. You know, there's already the Tech. I think Utah is going to grow into that just because they're going to play very important games. Maybe not in the regular season either. You know, that I think they're going to play most years, whether or not they're scheduled or not, because of how good those two programs have been and their ability to maybe be the catalyst for the Big 12 Conference and kind of battle and back and forth for conference supremacy between Oklahoma State and Utah. I think that's going to happen. But the Colorado could be a fun one too. And you know who I could see getting mad at Deion? Really easily, because he gets mad at every single thing and throws fits.
Matt Campbell,
100%.
Yes.
Matt Campbell in Iowa State and Colorado. I could easily see that being a thing.
My Nazi.
Could totally see that being a thing. All right, everybody have a great Thursday. Be weather aware. There's chances of severe weather. We'll have it covered for you throughout the day on our sister station, KECO, Cool 94. Have a great Thursday. We'll be back to talk about it all tomorrow. Skinny on Sports, right here on the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered early.